host, Adam Smasher. With me is the lovely Erica Harm.
Hello. Miss Harm here.
There you go. And with us is special guest host and staff writer, Frank Cable.
Hello.
How you doing, Frank?
Hello. How are you today?
And he is a future guest, but today he's a guest host, so kind of a weird twist.
Zay.
Yeah. So, Erica, what happened this week? Well, first of all, I guess we should say what happened to Luis, because he's not here. He's conspicuously absent.
He's gone. I buried him.
No. Yeah. Oh. Luis.
Too angry.
Luis had stuff to do with his family, but good stuff. Good stuff. So he went on a little vacation and left me high and dry. That's what super, Luis did this week, which I'm sure he'll talk about next week.
Super family fun time with Luis's family.
There you go.
I wanted to help you with the work.
It's our next sitcom.
Margaritas.
Erica, what did you do this week? What were you up to?
I saw two movies, one very old and one very new.
That's cool.
I saw Zootopia.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I loved it.
Yeah, good.
I thought it was rather ballsy for a Disney movie.
Really?
Oh, yes. Cool. Yeah, there were some, not even references, just straight up analogies to topics today.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And the old movie was Easy Rider, which was very strange.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that is kind of an odd movie if you've never seen it.
Yeah. My husband and I watched it, and I looked at him and asked him, what would you give that? Like, how many stars? And he goes, I would give it 5 question marks.
Really?
I've been told that's a good.
I was confused.
I've been told it's a good representative of the attitudes of the time. But
yeah,
watching the movie, I'm like, well, huh?
It seemed like a societal core sample for this community of people.
Well, I think, at least for me, what I like about older movies like that is they didn't, like, today movies really, like, it's everybody that's anybody went to college and took, like, basic storytelling, and now they all have to follow a very basic storytelling structure. But I think some of those older movies, they're really more, in a way, they're almost anecdotal sometimes. Like, come to your own conclusion. Here's our story. Come to your own conclusion. I don't know. I like that. I don't know about you guys. I know I can appreciate that.
It's very not standardized
Well,
as far as movies go.
Well, you know, if you're thinking about it in another month or two, if you're still like, wow, you know what? What was going on in that movie? That's a good thing to me.
Yeah.
You know, if you just, if you see it, it's done, then you don't really think of it.
Yeah. Great soundtrack, though.
Yeah.
That was one of the first movies, I think, to use a pre-done set of songs for their soundtrack instead of having any originals that came in.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure.
Wow, that's
a little
cool
bit of trivia that sticks in my head. The other thing is at the beginning, the guy that they're buying cocaine from.
Yeah.
That's Phil Spector.
Yes.
Recently.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And
they
are doing cocaine.
Sweet.
In the movie.
That's
they're
them.
Actually
the 60s.
Doing cocaine.
Or early 70s. When was that made? 69, wasn't it? Or 70?
Yeah, I think it's late 60s.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
69. It is 69.
There you go. Cool. Anything else this week? Or that was enough. That was a full week.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. How about you, Frank? What'd you do this week?
I also watched a couple movies. Well, I thought they were both old. One was MST 3000, the old second season.
Oh,
I watched Wild Rebels.
Nice. Kind of like Easy Rider, except bad.
Really, really bad, yeah.
No, redeeming qualities.
It was kind of one of those. It was a decent kind of riff, but it was also really, really bad. I mean, the movie was kind of, some of them were so bad they're funny, like Attack of the Giant Shrews, but that one was, we're going to set these guys up and catch them bank robbing, but dude, you know where they are. I mean, they took them to the clubhouse.
Yeah. Is that the one where the guy, like, loses his wallet in the train or something?
No. This is the stock car driver who can't quite make it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. It's been a while, but yeah.
Yeah. And Joel's got the little goatee.
Oh, okay.
And he seems a little extra high. I don't, he's just so mellow. You're like, whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So you said the second season. Was that the second syndicated season or like the first syndicated season, but the second?
I think.
Because you know how they were on like a year or two on just local? In Minneapolis, I think, or whatever that state is.
You know,
sorry, Minnesota.
Yeah. It's Minnesota,
We don't know any interesting names.
Don't you remember the pop-up with the fan club information? It's like Hopkins, Minnesota.
That's right.
It's labeled episode 207. I'm not real sure.
It's probably the syndicated, I think, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it depends.
I think that was Comedy Central.
Was Tom Servo our beloved Kevin, or? Was it another guy that didn't sound familiar at all?
No, it was Kevin.
Then, that would be the syndicated. Yeah. Because I think he started in season two. The season one, I think, was the other guy. I'm sorry, other guy. I don't know your name. That's terrible. But
I recently read it too, and I can't remember it for the life of me. Oh,
I know. I should probably look at that up. Look that up.
I thought of something else, if you don't mind.
Oh yeah, yeah, go.
I just remembered. Did any of you hear about this interactive Civil War Captain America thing at the? Is it the Mirage?
What? No.
They're advertising something really? Like that. Yeah, maybe we should field trip over there.
Yeah.
Or something. How long and interact with it.
How long is it going on?
I don't know. I should investigate.
Yeah, we should.
I just saw it on the back of one of those advertising buses that drive around, and I was like, oh, how did I not know what that is?
Yeah, no kidding. We should go check that out. We should. That'd be a good field trip. Maybe next week before the next show, you know, if I'm not working.
Find out. Make sure it's open.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
That or actually cool. What it is advertised.
Yeah.
Captain America was in a very G-string. Different.
Well, like you too, I also watched movies. I was continuing my 30 Days of Godzilla, but unfortunately this last week I had a lot of trouble staying awake. So it took me like every day all last week to get through Godzilla vs. Destroyer.
Huh.
And I don't know why. And it's not that it's a bad movie. It's not boring. I just couldn't stay awake. I'd put that sucker in and be out. Like I was conditioned.
Working
so, but
too
I did
hard.
Finally, but I, yeah, probably that too. I did finally get through it though. So now I'm on to the Millennium series. Thank God. So I haven't started that yet because I did get a couple movies on a DVD, which was Island of Terror, the old Hammer. I think that's Hammer. No, I don't think Island of Terror was Hammer, but Peter Cushing is in it. It is a 60s British science fiction. And, it's about like mutant cancer cells that kill people, kind of, or something. Yeah.
So not that different from normal cancer cells.
Well, these are like you know 4 feet big, and they have like a single tentacle that like grabs you and like sucks your bones out or something. But that was pretty good, yeah. And although I got like kind of a crappy old copy, so I wanna. It is on Blu-ray, so I do want to kind of splurge and buy it on Blu-ray one of these days. Hmm. And then I also watched, or I started to watch. I haven't finished it yet. Another classic. Oh, Quartermass in the Pit. I don't know if you're familiar with Quartermass, Dr. Quartermass, Bernard Quartermass, nothing.
We're both shaking our heads.
And you call yourselves British science fiction fans? What is the matter with you? Anyway, Dr. Quartermass.
I don't know if I ever made that stipulation.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I liked old Doctor Who. I'm not really into it anymore.
Yeah. He was actually a big, I think he was an original. I think he was like the original British science fiction television hero. I think he actually predated Doctor Who. And then, he was just a guy. He was a scientist. And, it was a TV show, you know, for years. And they actually made a few movies, which all of the movies are pretty regarded pretty highly because I guess I've seen them when I was a kid, but I haven't seen them in years. And, they're regarded pretty highly as more along lines of hard science fiction as opposed to kind of popular crap that's out there. You know what I mean? And, so far I'm not done with Quartermass in the Pit. And since it's probably been like 30 something years since I've seen it, it's good. I like it. And it's a much more complicated script than the average crap.
Did British pulp fiction fantasy stories, did that start before the American? The Amazing Stories,
God, that'd be a good topic for a show. I don't know. I know, well, like Penny Dreadfuls were British, right? And that was sort of the beginning of pulp crap, right? But I don't know if science fiction started. I know, like Dracula, for instance, I know that wasn't the first vampire novel. It just became the most popular.
Yeah.
And I guess Dracula is heavily based off of another vampire novel from 20 years before it or something, except it was a female vampire. So...
And there was like a female love interest on in it.
And I think
I've heard of this and I forget what it's called and I want to read it.
Yeah. And I think Hammer made a version of that called The Vampire Lovers in 1971. It's supposed to be very good, but it's unlike other Hammer movies. It was definitely a different tone, but that's on my to buy list at some point.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. Anyway, anything else this week?
Oh, the other movie I watched, and I didn't know Elvira was still making movies.
Yeah, she's been
making movies. Is she really? Wow.
Popping up a lot recently, actually.
She does more of the, like, she doesn't do riffs like you see on MST. What you've got
she'd occasionally jump in with a smart-ass comment. But
she'd jump in sometimes and she'd have a little, I don't know what you call it, like a vignette. Like the movie would stop and she'd do a little story and joke and then it would go back.
Yep.
Now she pops in or it'll look like a text across the screen kind of thing.
Really?
Makes almost like those old VH1, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Bubble videos or whatever.
Pop-up videos.
Yeah, tech TV used to do that too, kind of, yeah.
And they did, it was an amazing movie called Cannibal Women of the Avocado Jungle of Death.
Yes.
Where Central California is a impenetrable jungle. Where cannibal women live.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of this.
Yeah, and we couldn't have like an avocado deficit with the communists.
There's a road trip right there. Nice. Wow. And that was Elvira? It was a new thing?
It's a new one. And she still looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's crazy. I didn't even know that was a thing. She should do better marketing. I hate to say that. Elvira, I love you, by the way. Being a former Las Vegas local. You. Yeah, being a former Las Vegas local. We love you.
Yeah, I didn't know it was there at all until... because I used to watch those shows like Camp Cool Rider and Elvira. Yeah. But it's that that one app that Don showed me.
Tubi
TV, where they've got even the old Captain Scarlets and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
They've got a bunch of those.
I'm going to have to check that
out. Yeah, it's an interesting app.
I was not aware of that.
Lots of commercials, but still stuff you don't see anywhere else.
Awesome.
Yeah. I know one thing we all did this weekend is we continued our quest to start a Shadowrun campaign.
Yes.
That was interesting. It is a different system, though. It is quite different than I think anything we played. And I thought Fate was different. Shadowrun was definitely different.
But different animal, definitely. Yeah.
But it's cool. Like we talked about, it's like, it keeps us sharp. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to learn new things.
Exercise your brain.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I did like the initiative so that you're not just doing the old D&D conga line of death.
Yeah.
Where it's like, your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn.
I like the fact that the guy that was, they looked like these two orcs or trolls looked like they were going to just wax us. And then he got close to me. And then I unleashed my shock hand. And that turned out to be I should have done that in the first place. Should have ran up and just grabbed people.
That seemed almost OP.
That effed that dude up.
Thing?
Like he killed you. He was going to start tearing me up because it took us both to take one of them down. And then once I got that shock hand on him, it was all over.
Five armor piercing.
Yeah.
What the hell?
That dude went down like in three rounds? He was messing me up, but he went down quick after that, boy.
Good practice.
Reevaluating my choice of weapon. Because even though it said it was a better weapon, I'm like, well, you know, I plugged this guy a couple times.
Yeah.
And
it's
almost High Noon Saloon rules. Here, I've got a chair that is more powerful than any shotgun you could have. Yeah. Boom, you know, and down I went.
Well, and that's what even the rules say. It's like body armor is huge in the Shadowrun universe. Like, everybody's got it. If you don't have it, you're kind of dumb.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I got from combat yesterday.
And the two losers I was throwing at you guys, they were... way better with the machetes than the pistols.
They were a little scary.
The pistols would just zing, zing, nothing happened. Yeah. And then get in with a machete.
He tore you up with that machete.
They chop, had a lot of body, chop. A lot of body defense, those guys, because the humans max out at 7.
It's because they were ghouls or something like that.
All I know is shock hand for the win, baby. Boom.
All right, Iron Man, whatever. I'll adjust for that.
Oh, no, come on.
I don't know how.
I'll just make two shock hands. We can never seem to... it was like the beginning of summer vacation, so it seems like everybody in our gaming group suddenly had something to do. And it's like, it seems like when you're available, Frank, and you're available, Erica, then I'm not available and Luis isn't available. But then you guys are available. I mean, I'm available. And then like that one week, I think you were out of town or something.
Right, right.
And then I think the same weekend you weren't available and then my brother who was also in the group wasn't available. It was just like, it just seems to be how it's been for the last month.
There's been a lot of traveling and visiting of people recently.
But you know what? I think we do this like every year though. It seems like there's that one month where it's just, we can never seem to get everybody together. But that's supposed to change next week, supposedly.
There was also a convention.
That's true. The convention was last week. Yeah. And then, you know, my brother's no longer doing things with his son, at least for a few months until that starts up again. Stuff like that. So, you know, the Elder Smasher.
I guess kind of the same thing will happen around winter when we're all like, holidays. Oh,
it does. Yeah.
Visit mom.
Yeah.
Or that one aunt you never want to see or something. I don't know.
There's people in town I have to hide from.
You have in your life.
Yeah, there's people.
Quick, make excuses.
Yeah. All right, you guys want to take a break?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Okay, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about MST3K, since next week is the big RiffTrax MST3K reunion show. And if you don't know what that is, stay and be educated. And if you do know what that is, stay and be entertained.
Hopefully. Is that July 5th?
No, it's the 20th. Oh, it's this Tuesday.
I was going to say, you said it was in 2 weeks.
Did I say 2 weeks?
28th, and then there's a redo.
There's a redo.
Oh, the Encore. Yes.
And if you don't know about that, you're an MST3K fan, and I say this a lot, shame on you. That's this Tuesday, the 28th. I think it's the 28th, right? Yeah.
28th, yeah. Okay.
All right, join us.
28th.
Join us. Join us.
Now you're in the cave of the Blight Dragon. He sees you and begins to rear his head to attack. What do you do?
I draw my mythical blade of Tyrande.
Roll for your attack.
Natural 20, a critical hit.
Keep it down, guys. I'm trying to listen to the Geek Lounge.
The Geek Lounge? What's that?
It's a really awesome show that talks about comics, movies, video games, and all things geek-related.
Do they make fun of blatant stereotypes like us?
Nah, they're pretty cool. They even taught me how to get girls.
Did they really?
No, but I bet they get a lot of girls.
That's right, Cecil. We do. Ah, who's that?
It's Adam from the Geek Lounge.
Yep, that's me. Tune in every week for new episodes as Luis and I discuss geekdom, pop culture, and everything in between.
If I listen, will you get out of my house?
Is there any Mountain Dew in that fridge?
I only have two left.
Tune in every week.
My Mountain Dew.
The universe.
I'll send him cheesy movies, the worst I can find. He'll have to sit and watch them all, and I'll monitor his mind.
Now keep in mind, I can't control where the movies begin or end. He'll try to keep his sanity with the help of.
Welcome back to the Geek Lounge. How's everybody doing?
Excellent.
Back. I have returned.
You have more caffeine in you now?
A little bit.
Me too.
Or whatever's in these things. I don't
lots
know.
Lots of caffeine.
I stopped drinking these because they're really bad for you, but I'm drinking one now.
I stopped drinking those because I didn't like sitting at my desk and listening to my heart palpitate. I was afraid to move for a good 15 minutes.
Nice.
Student worker says, I need this. No noise.
I think 7 in 1 week is too many, and that's what I was up to.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm like, I just need to stop drinking these completely because I have no middle ground on these.
And graduate directly to cocaine.
No.
Wow, Monster's really expanded.
It's got a bit of gold C on it.
Like a dime bag of cocaine with a Monster logo on it. Like we're just moving on up in the world.
I hope they put Pam from Archer on the outside.
Oh my God.
That would be amazing.
She's just screaming and
yeah. All right. So even though we haven't done it yet, we're here to talk about Mystery Science Theater 3000 because, again, the reunion show is this week on Tuesday, the 28th, and that is live simulcast across the country and probably Canada, too. I think they did do the last few in Canada. So
Vancouver.
Go see it. Support RiffTrax / MST3K. If you're an MST3K fan, Google it. If you don't know what RiffTrax is, find it RIFFTRAX. It's awesome stuff.
It's your people.
Yeah,
go to them.
There you go. Go to them. So MST3K started in the 80s, right?
Yes.
It started in Minneapolis. It did start in Minneapolis, but it was Minnesota. For some reason, I can't get those two separated. One's a city, one's a state. I know my earliest memory with MST3K was on cable television, of course. And I think I watched it probably around season 3 or 4 was the first time I had seen it. And I was just like, this is weird and odd, but I liked it.
That's when we first got it here in Vegas, because I think that's when I started watching it, too. That's where I can remember my friends bringing it up.
Yeah, yeah. And they did a lot of the old, like, Gameras and a couple of the old Godzilla movies originally, until Toho said, what are you doing? Yeah. And then Dai, or the guy who owned the American rights to Gamera, I was like, nah. I guess he took Gamera, or whoever owned the rights, took it seriously as a serious property. Oh. And they clamped down, and, like, I guess they lost the rights to the Gameras or something. I remember reading something about that. My details are probably wrong.
There was like a distribution
issue. Because he took the property seriously. And then I guess Toho never gave him the rights or something. Oh. I guess like certain stations, the way I understood it now, I'm probably wrong. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Geek_Lounge. Facebook is just the Geek Lounge, of course. But I guess the television studio or the television station had the rights. But they didn't have the rights to actually riff it and stuff like that. So Toho, years later, clamped down on it when they released them on DVD. Erica, what is your first memory of MST3K?
My first memory, I must have been, I don't know, 8 years old or something.
Yeah.
Because I guess I'm young-ish.
That's right.
Like an old lady.
We're both old guys.
I got socks older than her.
Yeah, I know.
we're old You guys. Have a child, and I don't. Yeah. An adult one.
Yeah. Almost. Well, yeah, no, she is now. Duh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where was I going? Oh, yes.
First time you saw.
Yeah.
I might have been 8 years old, and I was laughing at them riffing something, because my folks found it on TV, and were like, well, we'll watch this and see what it's about. And I was, like, cracking up and laughing really hard, and my dad goes, you don't even know what that joke means, do you? I'm like, what? It's funny.
Yeah.
Everyone else is laughing.
I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And I liked the robots. I wanted to build robots and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there was something really quirky and charming about the whole, I remember, like, the Gizmonic Institute thing and the robots, and I was just like, this is cool, even though I was probably, like, 23 or something, 24 when I first saw it.
I think I got lucky, and one of the first ones I saw was so ridiculous and funny that it kept me, even with the, you know, the robots and Joel and all them, that really drew me. But the Attack of the Killer Shrews, I think, was the first one, where they dressed the whippets up as killer shrews.
Yeah.
And so the guy's running and whippets. Screaming. Yeah, the, you know, miniature grounds.
Yeah.
And so the guy's running away, and I think is when I tuned in mid thing, and I was like, you know, and you can see they're licking him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because they're not particularly aggressive. They're just whippets.
And they probably put, like, a beef base on them or something.
I don't know what they did, but it was just kind of a, you know, I'm like, and he's screaming, like, oh, they're eating me. And you can see the tail underneath the costume.
Yeah. They're all wagging.
And you hear the...
I think they did, they put in some sounds to make it sound like, you
know,
yeah.
Not convincing. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch the rest of this.
I think the first one I saw might've been Prince of Space.
Oh, the easily bamboozled Prince of Space.
Yeah. I think, I know it was one of the first ones, which I don't know. Was that an early season? Maybe I didn't catch it until later.
I think that's like in the 800s on the episode list. Because that's one of my more favorite ones.
Is that a Mike or a Joel episode? Now I got to look it up. I think at least that's the one that sticks with me. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe it was an old Godzilla or something I saw. That might have been true, too, because even at that age, I was a big Godzilla fan. And maybe I was just like, oh, what? What is MST3K Godzilla? Like, what? I got to watch this. You know what I mean?
And then Prince of Space is a, if you, except for there's no monsters in it.
Yeah, it's
except for the part where he's running around.
Oh, it is a late one.
Yeah, it's not one of the newer ones.
No, it's not.
Early ones, rather.
Yeah. And, Kevin Murphy directed that episode. Yeah, that was a later one. I don't know. Did I not catch it? No, that can't be right.
Well, by the time, I think by the time we got them here, they were already kind of well along, you know.
Maybe. it morphed and changed through the years, and they actually jumped stations at one point and came out with a theatrical released movie, which a lot of people were pissed at because apparently This Island Earth, I think it was called, was considered a sci-fi classic. Huh. And they had mutilated it for MST3K sake because they wanted to have a legitimate movie when they did their theatrical movie.
Now they do it all the time with Riff Track, so they do good movies, not just cheesy ones.
Yeah, yeah. And then I know, like, I don't know, This Island Earth, I might alienate a lot of science fiction fans, but I never found it. I never thought of it as like a classic. I always, even as a kid, I thought it was kind of one of the cheesier science fictions. Probably liked it, but
at the time for the budget and...
Yeah, but if you put up like This Island Earth next to like Forbidden Planet, come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's true.
You know, come on. It's nowhere near like that kind of level of science fiction. It's much more kind of a, I mean, it's not a silly story, but it's like as serious as everything is in This Island Earth, it's when the mutant pops out and you're just like, that thing's silly looking, like the giant weird pulsating brain and stuff like that. But
I honestly, this is the first time I'm learning it was a classic. I would not have guessed.
Oh, This Island Earth? Yeah.
Yes.
It didn't.
I was like, eh.
It didn't seem to make it out of that era, though. That's the one thing. It's like not really remembered now, except if you're probably like my age or older.
What year did that come out?
I have 58 or something like that.
Well, so mid and late 60s was Star Trek, and that was about as big as a license as you can get.
Yeah, true.
And even the special effects for that, my daughter, who's an animation major, I made her watch the original series with the old graphics.
Yeah.
And she's looking at it going, yeah, I could do that in an afternoon with a Sharpie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it just, you know, the
1955, This Island Earth. But that was a lot of work back then to make those effects look that way. That's the amazing thing.
Right. Like, but even compared to Forbidden Planet, you know, which strangely not enough people know about.
Yeah, that's weird. Since if you're a Star Trek fan, if you haven't seen Forbidden Planet, shame on you.
But it's a good movie.
Yeah,
fix this immediately.
And it is based off Shakespeare, so there is some metaphors in there that are a little like, well, that's not very science fiction-y, but like the whole End of Innocence thing.
Yeah, based on The Tempest, correct?
Yeah, correct, yeah. But
it's Leslie Nielsen being serious? Come on. You got to watch it just for that. He does a good job.
Yeah.
That was back when he was serious. That's the thing. Yeah. And most people only know him now from like Naked Guns and all the other crazy bad movies that he did. He's still awesome, though. He's an awesome guy.
Them doing a serious movie.
Oh, yeah. This Island Earth.
And then the movie they made out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. They cut it up pretty bad. I know that. And it's funny, too, because have you seen This Island Earth MST3K version?
I don't think I did.
It's cut up in such a way that it doesn't make sense. Like, I think they did that on purpose. They took out a fairly big chunk, I guess, in the middle. So it's kind of like they're on the planet, they're not on the planet, they're on the planet again. You're like, wait, what happened? So I assume they did that on purpose to kind of give it a nonsensical feel. I don't know.
I wonder if there was a time constraint and they wanted to do their segments in between.
That was part of it, yeah, because they always had to cut everything down. Even on TV, they had to cut everything down.
So. They were still on a local, like a Minnesota station, like one of the nighttime cable stations.
Yeah, and then they were syndicated out, yeah. And then, I don't know. So what's your, should ask that question, the penultimate question of MST3, Misty fans everywhere, Joel or Mike?
I like Mike. Mike's, to me, is more engaging.
Yeah.
I like Joel because Joel will, one, he was the one that I was on when I first started watching. And I do like that he kind of lets the robots do more, where Mike's puts it more equal with all of them.
Yeah.
So if you like the robots more, Joel's your guy. But Mike.
That is
true. I like Mike, I think, a lot better. All the way from the very first one with Mitchell, and they.
Oh my God, Mitchell!
That was such a great one, and it seems like the, I mean, I feel like the riffs overall kind of got better.
Yeah,
with him.
Like Mike.
Nice.
I really do.
Yeah.
I don't know. The show seemed friendlier with him somehow. Yeah. I was like, I want to be friends with robots.
Yeah. I like Mike for a different reason. Go ahead. You were.
He let Gypsy try to riff something, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
I was like, Gypsy wants to riff. Yeah. She's like, this is really bad. I can't do this.
This is really bad. Yeah.
I'm leaving. Okay, Gypsy.
Well, I guess the interesting...
I knew she couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I guess the interesting thing was Mike was hired as a writer, like, right out of college or something? He was fairly young, like, the very first season. And then season two, he was head writer. So, I mean, that should tell you something about who was sort of fundamental in a lot of things. But I know I'm Mike. I mean, I like you said, I like Joel in a way. Yeah, so when Mike took over, and of course, Mike took over, and that's when Bill took over for Trace Ballou as Crow. I guess I should admit this now. I didn't notice at the time. That's terrible. I like Bill. I love Bill. I like Trace, too. But when they took over, it seemed like, well, kind of you said, it was more spread out. Like, they would actually take turns being the straight guy, where when Joel was there, he was more often the straight man. You know what I mean? But then when Mike came, and I think for me, like, it was the opposite of you. Like, Mike, when Mike came on, it seemed friendlier to you. It was the opposite to me. When Mike came on, it was almost like a little edgier, a little, well, for lack of a better term, a little nastier. Like, he was more willing to make some of the meaner jokes where it didn't seem like Joel wanted to. And I guess that appealed to me, being a mean guy.
I don't know. Maybe I just thought it was kind of the spectrum went further out, the meanness and the niceness.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Because I like when, like, they're watching, what's the one with Mega Weapon?
Mega Weapon. Oh,
The motorcycle guy. I can't remember
Warriors
the name
of the Wasteland
it.
Or something like that? Yeah. Oh. Mega Weapon.
It's something like that. I don't think that's
it's a talking motorcycle.
But, like, they interview Mega Weapon, and they're like, hey, how you doing? That's right. He's like, oh, I got a firm or something, you know, doing a normal desk job or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Mega Weapon, yeah.
Joel was so laid back that a lot of times he just, you know, like I said, I like how he let the robots go, but Mike had comedic timing. One of my favorite parts was when he goes, hey, I need the keys to this thing, and he was still on Earth before they launched him up. And he goes, hey, Frank, you got the keys? And Frank goes, oh, yeah. You know, he tosses him the high security keys. And Mike just looks at the camera with the almost Peter Sellers kind of timing, you know, and it's like, nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to like this.
Yeah, yeah. Warrior of the Wasteland. That was what it was. Because he had the computer as motorcycle.
Yeah.
He had the Knight Rider as motorcycle, except not as smarmy.
It was a really annoying motorcycle, too. Yeah. And like when it... Spoiler alert.
Oh, no, that was 20 years ago.
Is that a thing right now? No,
it was 20 years ago. We could spoil the hell out
Mega
of it.
Mega Weapon, like, tramples the motorcycle.
Yeah.
And it's just the way the robots are cheering for it. Yeah, Mega Weapon.
Mega Weapon, yeah. Yeah. I think the first Mike episode I saw was... The head with the brain that wouldn't die.
Oh, yeah.
I think, wasn't that the first full Mike episode, too? But I don't know. I could be wrong.
I don't remember anymore.
I remember thinking it was, at the time, it was really funny, even though I watched it more recently. I was like, must have been a different me back then, 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
But he still did some great ones, though. I will tell you that when they started releasing the DVDs, which I'm going to say this on the record, I hate the way they have released the DVDs so far, to be honest. They're overpriced for what you get, especially the way really they release seasons of television now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just they released, like, what, 4 movies? And it was like Collection 1, Collection 2, Collection 3. It's like, I wish they'd release seasons, but whatever. I'm not in control of that.
I guess I have a question. I was thinking about how, you know, Joel, I like that he made those puppets. They're really cool looking.
The robots, yeah. He made all of them. Yeah.
And... later, way later in the series, Mike is talking to the nanorobots.
Yeah, yeah.
Did Joel make those? I was kind of curious. I thought he was gone at that point.
He was gone, yeah. I don't
think so. Somebody else must have designed those.
Yeah, they must have.
Gypsy ran a lot of the systems. Gypsy ran all the systems on the ship.
Yeah.
Which was, I think they explained it, even though I don't remember them being there in the beginning, I think they explained it that those were...
part of that?
Part of what she did. That's how she... cause things to happen. Because in Wild Rebels that I watched last night, this weekend, Gypsy was having a little bit of a breakdown. Joel's like, you know, I really feel like you're my best friend. They're really bonding kind of moment. And they're like, hey, we just need a break, you know.
Weird considering that was Jim Mallon that did the voice.
Right. And when Gypsy said, I'm going to take a little vacation, it was like a 10-second vacation. But everything was off. Life support, you know, Joel had to hold his breath for 10 seconds. You know, I mean, it's not super sciencely, accurate, but it was kind of one of those, she does a lot more.
It's really just a TV show, so you really should just relax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's good stuff.
So the nanorobots were around when Joel was around?
I don't think so.
I think it was Mike.
Yeah, they were just suddenly there.
Okay.
You know, like...
I'm trying to remember. I remember liking them.
I was just curious who made them.
Because they couldn't see him, but he had to look through the thing, and then they were like, hey, like crawling around on the circuit board or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, get out of here. When they released them on DVD, they had released the Toho ones, the Godzillas. And I guess that's when, I guess Toho said, whoa, whoa. Just because you had the rights to show them on your TV station and you got away with it, you know, you can't release DVDs. Those are our movies. And I guess they clamped down. And as part of, I guess, the settlement, Joel had to do something. And he came on with, I think, Attack of the Giant Gila Monster.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where you get that picture where it looks like Joel much more closer to now. Older, but not in a bad way.
Hmm.
They did like a little DVD-only thing where they had to say, take the Godzilla disc out, and you have to replace it with this and destroy the Godzilla one. Like, who's going to do that, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember on Netflix, back when the Godzilla one was still available, early Netflix when you could get it on disc, I actually had it, and I was so tempted to just take it. Like, just, oh, I lost the disc. I don't know what happened to it. I couldn't do it. I ultimately returned it.
That's part of the thing, man. You just pay him.
Yeah. But I was just like, man, because I knew it was like, this thing's going to disappear. It's going to be impossible to find. Sure enough, it's relatively impossible to find now. Yeah, but I had it in my hands. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Yeah. I was like, I want to be good. I don't want to be bad. I was Lupita in Santa Claus.
Not bad if you pay for it.
Yeah. Well, honestly, they don't charge you like the first time. I don't know if you've ever, I've had discs where they just disappeared. They only charged me for one. And I think that was a few years ago, right before I stopped discs. And they actually recouped it because like 3 weeks later it showed up with them. I had mailed it and it just disappeared. They had mailed it to me. And it never showed up, and they sent me another one, but they actually ended up charging me for it. I don't know, maybe it was because of my third over like the 8 years I had in Netflix.
Oh, I hope I don't ruin your day, but I called them and said, hey,
yeah.
Is there any way I can keep this? And they're like, oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
And they charged me for it.
Mother!
You know, but it was like $20 or whatever for something. Now I could probably, I saw the movie I wanted on Netflix or something now, but
damn.
I wanted it and I called him and I said, hey, I can't get this anywhere.
That was back when you could call him too, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't now.
Yeah. Now it's all automated stuff, but there was actually somebody on the service and they're like, oh, you're keeping it? Okay. We'll have to charge you.
I wish I would have known that.
Damn. I know.
I had to be a good guy. Damn it.
Well, I'm sure you can't do that now.
You probably could, but I don't think you can get that specific thing anymore.
Yeah.
But damn it, Frank.
I guess sorry, man. There's nothing.
No, it's okay.
I'm not going to say that. We'll have to cut it out.
What?
I was going to say, like, I guess you could just keep the discs and they'll just bill you.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Nobody can force you to return the discs.
Well, they had a process because I don't know if they had a real way to monitor. Like now we've got when you mail it off, it's collected in Vegas somewhere.
Yeah.
Because it's collected that day. So it's got to be in Vegas. So I assume maybe they had not as many collection points at the time.
Probably.
And so it's kind of a, because my student workers would get one here.
Yep.
And then mail it back from like New Jersey where he was from.
Yeah.
It wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
Now they've got collection everywhere. But I guess at the time, I guess they've expanded quite a bit too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was actually the Wicker Man is the one that they charged me for. And then it showed up like 3 weeks later from the post office. And then I was like, oh, hey, this showed up. I'll mail it back. And they actually gave me my money back. So,
oh, good.
Damn it. I lost Godzilla versus Megalon MST3K version on DVD because the version I own isn't very good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it says right on there, you know, keep circulating the tapes, right?
It does.
Yeah. It does.
So, come on. You know, they're giving me permission.
The tape's a DVD now. Yeah. It is a copy of the tape,
though. That's right. That is true.
It is tape in spirit.
Yeah. But that's good stuff. Anyway, you guys ready for a break?
Yeah.
And then when we come back, we're going to actually talk the evolution of MST3K and what that means for us now, if you don't know, which is primarily Rip Tracks.
I can't wait to learn.
So join us. Join us.
Join us.
Join us.
Join us.
Join us.
Join us.
Join us. Join us. Join us.
That'll be a good fade out.
It will. I know. It's like a...
I was getting interested in it.
There you go. Welcome back to the Geek Lounge. And we're back, and we're going to now talk hello again.
Hello.
Hi. We're going to talk the evolution of MST3K, what sort of happened afterwards, and where we're at now. And of course, if you know, then you know, and if you don't know...
Then you don't know.
Here we are. So after MST3K ended, which was on Sci-Fi Channel, right? They had already transferred over.
They'd moved over, done only sci-fi movies instead of some of the other stuff that they used to, like Wild Rebels.
Yeah, which was a shame, but that's okay.
Was it re-ran on Comedy Central? I know it was on there for a while.
I don't know. I think
and in
they
the
moved...
later years, that's when I saw it most. I didn't really see it on Sci-Fi Channel.
I know they were syndicated, so I think they moved exclusively to Sci-Fi. I think you could watch old ones, like rebroadcast, I think, on Sci-Fi. Or, well, it was SCI only... back then. But
Yeah. I don't remember seeing anything but the sci-fi themed movies on Sci-Fi Channel. Not that they didn't have them, but I never saw anything. But. Yeah.
And then they ended, sadly. Yeah. And then what happened to everybody? Do you guys know? I know.
They split up into Riff Tracks.
No. Riff Tracks also, came later, actually. Right. It was the film crew first.
Oh,
which is Kevin, Kevin, Bill, and Mike. And you can actually get some of those off of the Riff Tracks site.
Right.
And then I don't know what Joel did right away, but I know he eventually started doing Cinematic Titanic.
Yeah, it seemed like he was avoiding it for a while.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember reading that he wrote for something else for a while.
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
Oh, that sounds right.
I know.
And then he came back in his own capacity with Cinematic Titanic.
Yeah, I know TV's Frank probably did the most after. Like, up until Riff Tracks, anyway. Because I know he actually developed a couple TV shows and wrote for them for a long time. One of them being Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah, he was actually prolific.
Yeah, I like TV. Like, when I was younger, I thought TV's Frank was, like, dumb. Like, when I was in my 20s. Yeah. But, like, now, when I watch those old shows, I'm like, that guy is awesome.
He is.
Like, I don't know.
You don't love the sweet floppy Frank?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Well, back then, when I was in my 20s and I was a soldier, I was just like, who is this freaking Joker?
Did you see his going away dance? The greatest Frank of all.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to check that out. I probably did see it, but it's probably been a few years.
He does performance art in the black leotard.
Okay, yes, I do remember that now. Yeah.
I've probably subjected you to it.
Yeah, that guy was. Yeah, in retrospect, I love TV's Frank now, but and then like the film crew, which didn't really do a whole lot, and then I think soon after that is when they started Riff Tracks, which is a different take on it. Yeah. And we'll talk about that in a second. But let's talk Cinematic Titanic real quick first. Do you guys know what Cinematic Titanic was?
I've seen a couple.
Yeah. I never got into it.
Yeah, I never get into it either. And I think the format to that. Was it seemed like Joel was trying to do more of an exclusive or intimate riffing, which I think the concept was interesting. Like he did something where they would actually go to a theater and do it live for that audience only. But it was like 6 or 7 of them. And they actually had a scaffolding around the screen. I mean, I thought it was an interesting concept. Me personally didn't find the execution nearly as interesting as the concept.
See, to watch it, the difference between the MST with the three of them down there, you could still kind of watch the movie. So you kind of knew what was going on.
Yeah.
On the couple that I watched, it was with the Cinematic Titanic. It was so much riffs. You almost couldn't catch what was being said in the movie.
Exactly.
And I kind of had a hard time with it.
Because there were so many of them.
Because there were so many. And I found myself listening not only to break out what the dialogue of the movie was, so I got the joke.
Yeah.
I found myself having to try and pick out Joel's voice because he was one of the funnier ones, and the woman who was the
Pearl. Mary Jo.
Mary Jo. Yeah. Mary Jo was one of the better ones.
Yeah.
And so the other two were just kind of going, and every now and then they'd get one, and it was surprising. Yeah. But typically, I was like, I'm trying to sort out voices.
Yes.
And the dialogue, and it just became too much.
Now, I think, like, by his concept, I think if you went to one live, it would probably be cool. You know what I mean? But I don't think it translated well to, like, watching it as a VHS or DVD, for me, anyway. That was where it kind of conflicted. Because, like, his concept was cool. Going to see it live was cool, but it was relatively pricey. I want to say it was like $80 or $90 to go see a live show, which I get because it was exclusive to whoever was in the theater. So I got it. But at the same token, it was like they really didn't go to that many places. But I mean, I guess that's a matter of economics. Mm. I mean, if you can't sell out, you know, then you're not paying for yourself. You know what I mean? So it was kind of that exclusively thing. It was, it made it unique, but it also worked against it, I think. I don't know about you guys. I don't think it translated well to video, though. That was the one thing.
And Vegas was too small at the time to attract them here.
Yeah. And so. I think that's where it got me. Like you said, it was like, there was just too much going on. Right. You're getting pulled this way and that way. You didn't even have a moment to even laugh at the joke relatively. And then you're trying to listen to another part of it. Yeah. Did you ever watch any of the
cinemas? No, I've never seen it. Okay. Yeah. I did hear Mary Jo is in it, and I want to investigate it for that reason alone, because I love her.
Oh, well, then you may be interested to know, because I don't know if you do. You probably do know. But on Riff Tracks, they're now featuring Mary Jo and Mike's wife.
I did hear that. Yeah. I love that. I want to hear what Mike's wife sounds like.
Yeah. Well, she was on the old MST3K. She was one of the writers, I believe, and because that's how they met. And then
that's right.
She would do a lot of the female like parts during the bits and stuff.
The background people. Yeah, the background people.
She was actually Lisa Loeb in one episode.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Bridget, that's her name. I couldn't remember the name there for a second. Bridget Nelson, yeah. And so it's her and Mary Jo now. And I actually have one of the movies that I bought a couple weeks ago. Because some of their early stuff when they started doing it for Riff Tracks, like the little preview clip they give, I was just kind of like, yeah. You know, and I was a little lukewarm about it. And I'm not big into shorts because it's just like, you know, I'd rather have a movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm sorry, Riff Tracks. But when I saw the preview for, I want to say it's like some kind of Attack of the Moon Women or Kingdom of the Moon Women or something that they did, the friggin' preview was really funny. And it's a good riff, too. And I was like, okay, this is, now we're talking. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, because they definitely have chemistry together. But it seems like Riff Tracks is also kind of put, it almost seems like they're putting them to the forefront. They're doing more now than the other three, at least for a while.
Anyway. Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to build their catalog. I don't know. Cinematic Titanic, and yeah, it just didn't seem to catch on. Then the film crew didn't really catch on. And then, of course, Riff Tracks, I believe, only started with Mike. Because I remember some of the first riffs, if you go back in the catalog, it's just Mike.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't seen the old ones.
Yeah. And the difference, and if you don't know for some reason, and again, if you don't know, shame on you. The primary difference with Riff Tracks, and this is why it was a different take, of course, was instead of riffing bad movies, they would release an audio track for cult favorites. And eventually they started doing big movies, like actual Hollywood big budget productions. And that was how they got around sort of the copyright thing, is basically they're just selling you an audio track. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that seemed to be the thing.
Just synchronize it with the video.
Yeah.
And as it went through, they'd have the voices. And if it didn't sync up with the time, you had to try and, you know, stop them, you know.
Yeah.
Stop, go.
And it was a little rough at first. I remember the first few that I had. But once you get the hang of it, because I know when the first time I watched over your house, I think you were, your wife even said, like, wow, you do that quick. I'm like, that's because I watched like 10 of them now. Yeah. I can sync them up pretty good now. Yeah.
But, disembodio.
Disembodio, yeah. But I know that seemed to be, now, I don't know the history of Riff Tracks, so I could be wrong, but this is how it seemed to me as a consumer. It seemed like Mike was pretty much alone, and then Bill and Kevin would occasionally sort of guest, and then it seemed like he got them back eventually, and then it seemed like that was the...
He wooed them.
It seemed like that was... And granted, it's a business, so I mean, once you start making money and you can show, like, look, guys, we may not... Well, I don't know if they like each other or not, but it's like, we may not always get along, but look, man, this is something. That's what it seemed like as a consumer. Like, once they all three got back together for Riff Tracks, that's when it seemed like to me when the riffs were, like, noticeably... better.
Yeah.
Like something about the three of them noticeably better.
I watched you know when they did the National Geographic
thing
and it was on TV and everything?
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I saw an interview. I read one with those three.
Yeah.
And it seems like they work really well together. It seems like they enjoy what they do. Like, I don't really have a reason to think that they hate each other.
And honestly, I don't know. And I would imagine you worked together a long time and you're in business together. There might be some residual frustration, but I mean, if you can manage to get over it, which it seems like they must have at some point,
they've got some chemistry.
Yeah. That's awesome. I know me personally as a fan of MST3K, that is huge for me that they seem to be just all syncing in a lot of their, I own a lot of their riffs.
Seems like it would be exciting too. I mean, financially, you'd have to get a movie, because if you're not providing the goofy movie, you got to make sure they can get the goofy movie.
Yes.
Same as we had a problem with the Lord of the Rings riff they did. You had to get the theatrical release and not the extended one, which, you know. Yeah. Now I'm out looking at, you know, Walmart.
I actually own the theatrical leases just for
it. Same here. So that's the only reason I have it. Yeah. And it, you know, not only is it exciting, it's like, well, you know, that's what we were doing when it was MST, you know, the old movies, and, you know, it didn't get that big then. It's like, yeah, but we're gonna do Harry Potter.
Yeah.
We're doing big movies?
I am in.
Yeah.
I finally got the Deathly Hallows Part 2, still haven't watched The Riff yet. Oh. That's the only reason I keep my Harry Potter movies, because I enjoy the books so much more. But I keep the movies just for the riffs. Just because of the riffs, yeah. I own a lot of movies like that, actually. Lord of the Rings, stuff like that.
That's how I watched all of the Twilight series.
Me too.
Only actually, with riff tracks. And it's interesting because you have two very vivid memories, right?
Yeah.
Really bad movie and one really funny good movie.
Yeah.
But they're the same movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about
that. You're just like, what? I've stumbled across a paradox.
Yeah. I've had the same experience. Yeah. I was like, I've only watched it once.
But I have two distinct memories of it. Yeah. It's like two separate.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it's a combination of them just being on and the fact that the material was so bad that it elevated them. But yeah, those riffs are actually pretty amazing. Yeah.
There were a lot of points where they don't even riff. They just snicker.
Yeah. And it fits. It's what you're thinking.
It riffed itself.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? And just stomping on like and walking up.
Like the end of the second to last movie, like when the credits are going, it's like, I'm freaking laughing my ass off. Like just them making the weird Voltaire sounds or whatever those guys were. Yeah.
You love the Spin Doctors. You have all their albums.
The Volturi were actually the Skeksis.
I own every Twilight riff. I know none of the movies. I think because we watched them together. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, which means that you own the movies. I don't know if you technically do.
No, I don't.
They're on loan.
Someone close to you owns them, right?
In fact, they are the wives.
Yeah.
No.
Cousin. Nope.
Yeah. Whenever I see those things where it talks about, I don't know, the Little Red Wagon children's book, something, anything, better love story than Twilight.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what it is.
But yeah, so riff tracks seem to find their rhythm, and Cinematic Titanic never did. Or at least, I mean, I don't know how they did financially. They must have done okay because they did last for years. But normally we don't try to voice frustration, but this frustrated me, and I have to say it. Like, Joel kind of, I think it was like last year or last spring, Joel announced that he felt like riffing had gone as far as it could go or something.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, like, I just think I've really run the course on this. And he ended Cinematic Titanic, which I merely didn't have a feeling about one way or the other because I never got to see a live show.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any particularly emotional attachment to it, but it was only like 2 months later he announced that he was redeveloping MST3K, and I'm like, what? I thought riffing had gone as far as it could go.
60 days sitting around your house thinking, what am I going to do next? You want me back?
I can make money.
I'm not doing anything.
I felt a little like, come on, dude. Like, just admit, like, hey, I want to redevelop MST3K. You're like, oh, great. You know? Now, are you guys excited for the new? Now, if you don't know, MST3K is apparently coming back this fall, I think,
With the guy from The Nerdist,
whom
I like. Yeah.
Do you? Okay. That's a different feeling than Luis and I have, but okay.
I don't know Kevin what kind Smith? Of host for. Yeah, I don't know what kind of host he's going to make for the show. I like his occasionally. The couple of times I've heard his show.
Well, again, I mean, I know Luis and I are pretty much like, we don't find him particularly funny. But again, it's how the chemistry works between all of them. So you never know. I mean, I'm certainly going to give it a chance. But
I didn't like Joel's stand-up either.
Exactly.
Yeah, I liked it, but I liked the invention stuff he did.
Right.
No, that was charming.
Yeah. He could be funny, and it was fine. You know, the robots tended to be the funnier part anyway. And I'm like, well, here's a new Joel.
However it works together. But, you know, to do that and to help get ready for that, the Riff Tracks, of course, like we talked about, we're doing an MST3K reunion show. So that's exciting.
Which is almost all shorts. Not one big movie, I think.
And oddly enough, here's a little anecdote. Luis asked me, because he's not going to be able to go because he's still with family, and he's probably going to have to go to the Encore. And he's like, do you think it'll be good? Because he was excited, because I'm excited, right? Think it'll be good? And I like thought about it objectively for a minute. I'm like, honestly, no. He's like, what do you mean? And I go, honestly, like, I think it's going to be one of the things while I'm there, I'm going to have a blast. And then I'm going to think about it objectively afterwards. And I'm going to be like, as far as like a pure riff, I'm going to probably be like, eh. You know what I mean? Like,
See now some of the shorts,
but no, not it's all more nostalgic to see them all together.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But some of the shorts are some of their best works.
Fair enough.
Now, not all of them. I don't know if the percentage, what the percentage is like, but some of those shorts are some of the best ones. You know, what's all around you? Carbon.
Nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the old ones was to annoy dad when he's first home.
Yeah, like it's a 50s, yeah, yeah. Like,
it's the 50s, etiquette yeah. movies, the yeah. old etiquette movies.
Young Republic Pictures, something like that.
I can't remember, but yeah. I remember laughing because I might have been working.
Yeah.
It was lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the little shorts there were just, I mean, they were intense. I think they're what Joel might have been aiming for with Cinematic Titanic, because they were short and intense.
Yeah.
And he was trying to do, well, if some's good, more is better.
Yeah.
You know, some of the shorts are amazing.
Yeah.
And one of the ones they picked out for this one is Time Hackers, where he goes back in time with a Commodore 64. Is the movie?
No, they're not. That's not short.
That's the old movie.
That was the last Riff Tracks, actually.
That's the last.
Time Chasers.
Time Chasers, yeah.
Time Chasers, that's what it's called.
That was a great riff, by the way. Bad movie, great riff. But, you say Cinematic Titanic, that's actually what worries me about the reunion show. There's so many people.
Yeah.
I'm like, are they all going to be on stage together? Because that'll be
all at once?
That'll be a mess. Uh-oh. Well, I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I would imagine it's probably going to be like a come and go thing. You know, like they did with F. Paul Tompkins, which it's a shame that he hasn't done more riffs, because his episode, which I think is House on Haunted Hill with Riff Tracks, is one of the better riffs. And his little segment, because he does like a little stand-up thing at the beginning, like a little anecdote, fantastic. Like, fantastic. And like his little riff, it's kind of goofy, but that was sort of the joke, where like he came in and he was terrible at riffing, and that was the joke, and it made it really good because it was kind of during a lull during the movie. And it added to it. So it's a shame that you don't see a more F. Paul Tompkins on there, because he was awesome. The little splash in his face with cold water bit was amazing. Like that. Because I think about that every time I'm like washing my face off in the bathroom, like, there better not be a monster behind me. Like, that's all I think about every time. Like, he'd have to bump me getting by me, you know?
Well, I'm hoping they'll have maybe a little round robin on each of the shorts.
I'm hoping so, yeah.
To see the chemistry mix, you know.
Because, like, everybody's on there. Like, Bridget Nelson's on there. Mary Jo Pell's on there. I think Frank Conliff's on there.
Yeah.
Trace Blues on there, you know. Like,
all three guys from Riff Tracks.
Yeah. And then Joel, of course. And the new replacement for Joel. The Nerdist guy, we don't know his name because we're terrible. Because he hasn't made us a fan yet. I can't think of his name. That's terrible.
He's the Nerdist guy.
But,
Some of his blogs and his articles that he's written, I've enjoyed them, but I'm not a regular fan.
Gotcha. Yeah. Jonah Ray. Yeah.
So the Nerdist guy, Jonah Ray, he was on one of the
perfect
tabletops too, wasn't he?
Was he?
I think so.
I don't know. He just never. Well, we'll see. Again, it's how the chemistry works.
I hope they like tag team and be like, you go, swap here.
I don't want to see like eight of them riffing together, because that's just too much.
It'd be a stream, just like,
well, it's like Cinematic. And we actually experimented with riffing a little bit, which hopefully we'll do more. And we found out that, you can have too many people and you can have too much input.
Yep.
And it is. And now, granted, we don't have anything. That's the funny thing. We have like half a riff. That's a lot of freaking work.
Yeah.
Holy crap. To do it right? Yeah.
It's not just sitting down with a beer and going, hey, you know, it'd be funny here.
Nope. It's a lot of work.
Did you write it down? Did you mark the time?
I have. Like, we have.
We messed up marking the time and all kinds of stuff like that.
But we do have like 3/4 of a riff that eventually we'd like to finish someday. But so there, I guess I unofficially announced we're throwing our hat in the ring of riffers.
I like how we would watch it and then write down all the stuff we made jokes about, and we didn't write down the times at that
point. The first time.
And we were like, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood of ninjas? Where does that fit?
Yeah. The growing pains of trying to riff the first time,
I don't know, man. Stork-ing, that was half a bottle of wine.
I don't know.
Yeah. But and your wife had the flat out best joke, which I'm not going to say because hopefully release it some way. Like when we were going through it, like bar none, best joke. Like, wow, Frank's wife just nailed that. That was amazing. Like she just shut us all up. And that was like the only joke she said too.
Stuck her head in the room, said the best thing and left. It was like, I feel a little inadequate.
If she had a microphone, she'd drop it.
Yeah, we were all pretty inadequate after that. We're like, wow, she should probably sit down with us. Because that was the best joke. So are you guys excited for the new MST3K before we wrap this up?
I am. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be good with the shorts and the blend if they do it right.
Yeah. How about you, Eric?
I'll give it a chance.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm always optimistic.
Yeah, me too.
I like to think I am anyway.
Me too. And Riff Trax, how you feel about Riff Trax is going? Because it seems like they don't do a lot of new movies anymore, which I'm kind of bummed about.
Yeah, something changed from because now they're kind of doing some of the old movies and then some that...
They still do some new movies, but it really seems few and far between.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing after the Avengers, I don't think, until like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That
was
no, like no, they did the
3-year gap.
They did the other ones related to it for a while, right?
No, I think the Avengers was one of the last big riffs they did before Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Huh.
I think. But it seems like they slowed down with the Hollywood movies, which I was kind of bummed about. But
I know they were working out a deal about how they would get away with doing that. Well, and they must have come up with something.
It must be stressful and require a whole lot of funds, right? I mean...
Well, no, because I think Bill, like he said in one interview, it's like we're actually doing something... We're not selling their product, but we're doing something that promotes the sale of their product. So how can they really... You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like... Our fan base might buy that movie and not normally have bought that movie. So how can they, why would they really want to stop that? You know, when we're potentially increasing their sales, you know, that was his argument. I don't know how that panned out. Maybe that caused some iron. Some lawyers called him after that interview. I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah. But, there were lawyer talks. I remember reading the article about
who
could do what. And I think, I don't know if it was a moratorium that they put on, you know, so you had to wait so long.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's why they haven't done as many movies. Maybe that's why it took them so long to do the last Harry Potter, the Deathly Hallows. Because there was a huge gap. They did the first one, and then they never did the second one until recently. So, I don't know.
Also, so many people own copyrights on pieces of movies.
Yeah.
It's like if one person out of 150 says no, it doesn't happen.
That's true.
Yeah. So, it must be ridiculous to coordinate at the very least.
Yeah,
in
maybe.
Some instances.
All right. Well, I think we beat this horse to a dead pulp. Any last thoughts before we get the heck out of here? Because I know you guys are anxious to get on with your day, as am I.
I'm going to go home and play Mass Effect.
Nice.
Because I'm playing old games and Warcraft 3.
Nice.
Also old. Very old.
Cool.
I'm going home to the Steam Summer Sale. And buy movies games that I play and games that I probably won't even look at for
like,
a year.
Yeah, I have like half of my Steam games I played once.
Yeah.
I remembered something and I need to tell Michelle. Life is Strange.
Yeah.
The same developers made another game called Remember Me.
Yeah.
And I was like, why didn't I know about this? And it's on sale, so I might have to go buy it.
Cool. All right, so hopefully you enjoyed our MST3K retrospect. And our Riff Trax sort of thing. All right, and thank you guys for joining me today without Luis, who is enjoying sun and beach somewhere, I think.
Corona,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah,
I like Corona. Or Modelo, there.
Oh, there, that's a good one.
There, Modelo.
All right, guys, so thanks for joining us, and I'll see you at Riff Trax on Tuesday.
See you on Tuesday.
MST3K reunion.
Bye!
Until next time, adventurers.
Created by Louise LaTorre and Munch, The Geek Lounge is produced and hosted by Louise LaTorre and Adam Smasher, and was recorded at Giga Hub Studios. You can find this show and many other shows at GigaHub.com and on Facebook under The Geek Lounge or on Twitter at Geek_Lounge. The show's theme is Shot Lunatique by the band Turquoise. You can find them at TurquoiseBand.com, TurquazeBand.com, for music, merchandise, tour dates, and much more.